And live from the capital and from our national studios here, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspectives of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Odinchere. For tonight, former President Rawlings speaks for the first time on his wife's crushing defeat at the NDC National Delegates Congress in Sunyain. Are patients really dying from wrong prescriptions? Where are the figures coming from? And also, the police and involvement in politics. The Inspector General of Police speaks. Behind the News on Radio Ghana and linking up with all our regional FM stations, Water Star Radio in Hope, Twin City Radio, and also Radio Central, among others. And as usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. You can send us your texts and other comments on to 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on to our first story. The period prior to elections is always a critical one for all those involved in its organization. For the police, it is not only this period, but observers look at the service critically as to how they act in critical and potentially charged political situations. There are accusations on occasions that they act according to the whims of politicians. Even though this may not be so, the Inspector General of Police has cautioned officers in the service to be apolitical in their functions. Behind the News explores further situations where the police may be perceived to be aligned and what can also be done. DSP Cephas Atta is the acting head of the Police Public Relations Unit and is on the line with us. Thank you so much, DSP Cephas Atta, for your time this evening. Hello, DSP Cephas Atta. We seem to be having a few challenges with him on the line. We'll try to get to him. But somebody who has been observing the political scene for some time and also how the police act is Paul Abrampa, a programs officer with CDD Ghana. He's also on the line with us. We appreciate your time so much, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. The IGP is cautioning the police service not to be engaged in some politics. You have observed and we've come on to this issue at a particular time. Do you see the situation changing in any way at all?
Thank you very much, and good evening to our listeners. I think it's a good call on the police service by the head of the police. I wouldn't like to say it's a bit too late, and I wouldn't like to say it's a new thing that the IGP is saying. I think it's recreating what is in the constitution. The police institution, being a security service and a professional body, as any other professional body in the public sector, is enjoined by the constitution to stay out of politics, and more so being a security agency, so that they can pass all their duties as professional as possible and not be intimidated by so-called powers that be. And you know, when it happens that way, the public will have confidence in the service to help them in all the activities they do, and the police itself will also be seen as professional in the activity that they do. You know, one thing that affects most of the country, especially in the developing country, is perception. So the way, as a professional body, you carry yourself has so much impact on how people also perceive you. So I think it's a call in the right direction, but it must go beyond just rhetoric and warning, and must be implementation of what the Constitution says, and whoever, any police service, any policeman who flouts it must be dealt with according to the Constitution. So yes, we thank the IGP to come out of that, but there should be an actual implementation of what is in the Constitution, and there should be a punitive action against any police officer who does that.
You've mentioned perception. We'll come back to you in a moment to explore it further, but we understand DSP Cephas Atta has now rejoined us on the line. We thank you. We lost you earlier. So sorry. Yes, Paul Abrampa Mensah has mentioned perception, and we want to ask, is this perception really worrying the service? Do you get confronted with allegations that you are still aligning yourself to political manipulation and all? Hello, DSP?
Hello?
Yes. We are asking about the perception and whether the accusations still flood into your domain that you are aligned in one way or the other to the powers that be.
Yeah, thank you very much, and I greet your listeners. Actually, the call by the IGP is very important, but it's an ordinary call. Ordinary, not in the sense that it's not significant. It is significant, but it's an opportunity, kind of police summit, where all commanders of the service, both regional commanders and unit commanders, have met. And the IGP saw it as an opportunity to once again remind his charges. It's a kind of a reminder of his charges about the tenets of the service, the tenets, the foundation upon which the police service is built. Your previous speaker echoed exactly what I intend to say as far as this issue is concerned. And the tenets and the foundation upon which the police service is built is that the police service should be neutral, should be impartial, should be non-partisan, such that we just serve as a neutral referee. I mean, refereeing a match between two or more people who have a common interest. And we have to do it such that everybody will understand that and see us as neutral people and have the confidence in us to be able to officiate and officiate the whole game of politics into a successful end. That is what the IGP was just reiterating. Once in a while, in the course of time, whilst you are performing your duties, one tends to slip out of memory what you are supposed to hold dear. Sometimes you tend to forget a bit. So when opportunities like this come up, the IGP thing, you must use it and re-echo, remind service commanders of our very foundation, our very existence,
yeah,
so that commanders will revitalize their minds and keep in their mind what the very structure of their profession rests on.
Okay. As you talk about this, are there instances where some of your men might have acted in the way that gave cause for an accusation and then it got to you?
I can't think of any now, but sometimes, you see, some members of the public also misconstrue our profession, and sometimes they tend to make pronouncements to the effect that so-and-so policeman is likely to be partisan or to be leaning on so-and-so party because of certain action or certain pronouncement the police officer make or might have taken just because of those actions or pronouncements. Somebody will just say that aligned with the so-and-so party or that party. Whilst in actual fact, the person might be doing his professional duties, purely and not, diluting it with any political colors. But simply because, we are coming from very far, Ghana, we are getting there, literacy rate is now increasing, and so we still have people who don't understand certain actions we take. Maybe sometimes because of the law too that we work with. It's not everybody that understands the law. And so when the police takes a decision, say something or does something, people might want to align them with one party or the other because it didn't favor them. So sometimes you hear people making such accusations, but most of the time, such accusations have no basis.
So you are talking about the same perception. So first, I'll come back to you on this issue, but let's come back to you, Paul Abraham Pamensa. He's just mentioned one fact, that is, people may not even understand the laws with which the police is working. Do you think that is a failure there on the part of the service or perhaps other institutions that should ensure that the populace are aware about policing rules?
Well, thank you very much, and good evening to my brother, you see, we have institutions in the country, and every institution has got specific mandates in the constitution. I think the police service is there to secure internal peace and all that. The NCC is there to do civic education. So it's not a duty of the police service to go in front of securing the property and lives in the country to do education. But once in a while, you see, they do something on TV. I think they do something on the JFM, Crime Alert, and all these things. But it shall be the duty of the constitutional mandated institution like NCCE to be doing civic education on all these things. They are employed in the constitution. Yes, so that's the problem. It's good we know about the boundaries of operations of all our institutions, so that we do not be confused, as my brother just said, the intentions of the police to act fairly. That not said, we can also know who are the fact that it's a human institution. There might be one or two people in the service who also act in a way that might not conform to the rules and regulations. So for the education of the public, I think we must leave that to the SEC and other institutions who are mandated to do that. And for the internal education of our own members in the security service as to the conformity to rules and regulations, such the IGP has to manage us of one, I think it's also because on the security agencies themselves to carry that out.
Yeah, but following up, you look at governance structures and you always talk to politicians and about politicians. Sometimes, do you see them acting in a way that will infringe on the law and bring into contempt even the way the police should act professionally, whether coming from opposition or not, because they think they wield some power?
Yes, that's the most important thing that the whole, I think, enjoys why the police service sometimes has to refresh our courses and fresh recruitment training, because it's very much important. Don't forget, all politicians seek one thing, power. And they employ any other means within the powers to secure that. So it shouldn't be a surprise that they take telephones and call some security agencies, call some police stations to release one or two people who have been arrested, being their supporters. Make false complaints to the police, and you know, police service, they are just like this is. They are under pressure, they are within a multiple of calls that they will need to. They can't say, you call me, I don't know, so I will not go and make the arrest. But the thing one realizes that it's the complaint that came that might not have given out the facts. So I don't sometimes blame the service itself. Yes, when you're dealing with politicians, that's why it is important that we always remind especially the newly recruited ones to be aware of some of these things and always act professionally. That's why it's also forbidden that you don't just go attacking and beating somebody because somebody has reported to you that he's offended. Because sometimes before you go into the issue, you realize that there's no idea of truth of what was reported. That because he feels he's so-and-so, he forces you to make certain arrests. If you don't do that, you pay the other human beings.
Yeah.
You most of the time here of proceed and leave, go on transfer here, do that. It's just sometimes that's what people perceive, that the people are being victimized based on what they perceive did not go their way when they were in opposition or otherwise. I think, yes, there are professional institutions, they will be worried, they will be disturbed, but it behoves the institution to always remind their people of the process in the system as far as their duties are concerned.
Yeah. Paul, I'll come back to you. But so far, you are still on the line. He's mentioned some of the pressures and acknowledging that it may not come only from government, but sometimes, you know, opposition may be a potential government, so you are also weighing your steps actively. Under such pressure, what do you do to help some of your men on the ground?
Let me say that I appreciate the contribution of the gentleman. He seems to have a profound insight into the topic that we are discussing.
That is why he's on Behind the News.
Now, one thing of which I would beg to differ from is the fact that we may do things as big on maybe our desire to have power or to pander to the whims and caprices of politicians. Sometimes there might be the temptation of the police, but the police sees itself as purely professional, and they try to wade through this murky sea very cautiously and try to avoid some of these things. So we are not seeing that the police has got such challenges. In fact, they are something that the police are able to navigate successfully through, and we are able to stay clear of politics and focus on our profession.
When you talk about these ones, people will try to understand you, but the perception may be there on certain actions taken. And you mentioned earlier that you try to also educate. You don't have that mandate. NCC, we are told, is having the mandate, even according to the constitution. But what do you do to let people know that in this or that situation, this is what the police should do? So you shouldn't see it as being biased or perhaps not acting in a neutral manner.
Yeah, thank you very much. In the first place, we also try to carry out our own kind of education. We come out with TV series. We are coming very soon. You will see our posters and handbills. We are doing a lot by way of educating the public on what we are doing, also letting them know exactly what our work is about. Anytime we go on air, we use the opportunity to discuss some of these things. Sometimes some members of the public take issues concerning security so lightly, such that why they don't really give any regard to security tips, personal security tips, they similarly don't kind of listen to us when we are spelling out some of these things that we are doing, some of our duties and other things. The gentleman also mentioned the issue of education, training and retraining. And that has been the cornerstone of this police administration. Ever since IGP Portavia Kwe came into office, he has made training and retraining the bedrock of police professionalism development. So you see that across ranks, from constable to senior ranks, there are batches upon batches attending courses, training and retraining, batch after batch. So you see that today's policeman is getting more enlightened. And enlightenment means that getting knowledge of what you are doing. Getting information, getting knowledge about what you are doing also means committing less and less offenses, and winning the confidence and support of the public.
Yeah.
That is what the police is focusing on. And they're also focusing on educating the public about our activities. We know that it will take some time, but the police service is not what it used to be in the past. We have made a lot of strides, and I know that we are making inroads, and very soon we shall get there.
Are you thinking of getting the political leadership together to see exactly where you stand on issues, so that at least you are not subjected to so much pressure, especially as we get into an election year?
Exactly. You see, even when it is getting to election year, what we do is we meet the political leadership across board and discuss with them what is on the table, what we stand for, and what we expect of them, and what the security enjoins. Demand of the public, the politicians, so that they see us as neutral. We are not there to favor anybody, to do anything to create a fertile ground for any political party or any particular party, but we are there to serve the interests of all. And we let them know that we are working with the law. For instance, it is easy for any party out of power to when any member, any group of people to decide to make embark on a demonstration, and the police comes in to say that, oh, it's not proper this time, so change your demonstration to so and so date or so and so place. It is easy for any party at all to any political party in opposition to say that, oh, police are being biased and those kind of things. And it's also easy for the political party in power to say that, oh, the police are doing right and so on. Let the table turn. Only tomorrow, and you see the very people who are accusing the police now coming to support the things the police are doing, and then those who were only yesterday supporting us also turning around and saying that police are doing wrong. All these things lend credence to the fact that the police are neutral, because we get criticism from all both sides. There are sometimes that you even see the government in power criticizing the police for what we are doing. And I mean, it is the best, because it is said that when all people say you are doing good, then you must have a problem. And when everybody is saying that you are doing something bad, you must have a problem. At all costs, you must have some people saying you are doing the right thing, and others saying that you are doing the wrong thing. But at all times, we make professionalism our cornerstone, our objective. And that is what we strive to achieve. And that is why IGP is reminding the regional commanders and the unit commanders that what we stand for, let us uphold it.
DSP Sofasat, I want to thank you very much for your time this evening. Paul Abraham Pamensa, you are still on the line. How can politicians help the police to deliver in a neutral manner?
The politicians should allow the police to give them less pressure to function as professional institutions as the constitution gave them to do. When they say the police is allowed free hands to operate, we all enjoy the peace, security that we enjoy in the country. I bet you, if had it not been the professionalism and the professional way the police handled the 2008 elections, we would have had ahead this enjoy this peaceful atmosphere that we are enjoying now. And as the Minister of Interior said today, we will have to plan and plan well against 2012, because our analysis in the environment suggests that 2012 is going to be more difficult than 2008. And therefore, we expect that all politicians, in government or oppositions, constituency executive service level, to allow the police to operate freely without any pressure being put on them.
I want to thank you very much too for your time this evening, Paul Abraham Pamensa.
Yes, my brother.
Paul Abraham Pamensa is a programs officer with CDD Ghana. DSP Sofasat, acting head of the public police public relations unit. They helped us with the issues of the police remaining neutral, even in our times. We have some of your tests here on Behind the News. And this one says, since the NDC believes in freedom of speech, the party welcomes any criticism from any quarters. AU Farouk Tamale sent in that one. And Jonas Aziage, I hope that name is right. Why would the police interfere in policies? Any police found in this act must be dismissed. And former President Rawlings will remain loyal and campaign strongly for NDC in 2012. Opposition MPP should think of how to campaign come 2012 and not think about the division in NDC. NDC is building stronger than ever before through the Better Ghana agenda, when Kolomasa, Sola, Tuna, Kalba district. Behind the news, we are taking a quick break, but let's remind you, are patients really dying from wrong prescriptions? That's an issue we'll be exploring. And also, former President Rawlings is speaking for the first time on his wife's defeat at the NDC National Delegates Congress. A quick break. Behind the news, you're welcome back. Former President Rawlings today broke his silence on his wife's crushing defeat to the sitting president, Professor John Evansata Mills, at the Sunyai NDC Congress. Former President Rawlings, in an interview with the BBC, said he was not disappointed about the outcome of the Congress.
No, I think it's the party, and I think the government that's going to pay the price for it. I mean, had my wife, for instance, realized early enough that they had used so much money on the delegates and had also used the fear factor, and things may no longer work in their interest, when last year as many as 82% were going to vote in her favor against the president, and then ends up the manner it did, had she even known, as I'm saying, and withdrawn, the delegates would no doubt have said, why did you withdraw? We would have voted for you. So we're talking about, you know, the complex psychological factor. We're talking about the fear factor that a few too many governments tend to use whenever they're in office.
So people were cowed into voting for President Mills and not to vote for your wife. That's what you're saying.
That's precisely what happened. Yes, it was very disappointing. And then again, she didn't take up this fight on her own. For almost a year and a half or two, I mean, the call, I mean, has been coming from the delegates from around the country for her. And
you said the call has been coming from the grassroots, but there are those who say that because this was a party that you founded, Mr. Rawlings, you somehow still think it's family property, and you're wrong. You should let go.
No. This is the usual talk of the little minds, please. As I kept on saying, and I'm still saying, I never went in for the presidency just to be a president for the sake of it. We took up a struggle to fight for socioeconomic justice for our people. So whether we're in office or out of office really makes no difference.
So will Mrs. Nana Konedu Ajiman Rawlings now give up politics, or will she continue and still want to go for the leadership of the NDC, or perhaps set up her own party?
I don't know whether she wants to go for the leadership again or set up her own party, but Nana will never get out of politics. I will never get out of politics so long as injustice continues in my country. What our government is doing is that they are perpetuating the ills of the past, and that will destroy the moral fabric of our society, and we have to avoid it. We have to prevent it. Yes.
So will the Rawlingses, both Mr. Jerry Rawlings,
yes,
yourself, and Mrs. Nana Konedu Ajiman Rawlings, stay in the NDC, and will you campaign for President Mills in next year's presidential election?
We're taking a break, and we're doing some serious thinking. She would want to finish her book, and so would I. And when the time comes, we'll think it over and decide what we really want to do.
Former President Rawlings on BBC. The Konedu camp had expressed displeasure with the way the Congress was seemingly skewed to favor the president. Former President Rawlings seemed to agree with the allegations when he told the BBC that the opponents used the fear factor and money to win the contest. The Ashanti Regional Secretary to support the Rawlings camp has joined us on telephone to share his views on Mr. Rawlings' interview. Joseph Yamin, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you, my brother.
I'm sure you listened to the entire interview with the BBC. What do you make of the former president's statements?
Yes, I believe that the former president is expressing his view the same way as any other person within the past is expressing his views and their opinions. And so I take it as his portion of what happened.
Yeah. He mentioned one fact that had remained even after the Congress. That is the fear factor. People have been cowed into submission and all. Did you see it that way?
You see, the Congress, right from the day of its announcement to commencement of the whole exercise, as far as the ending of it, has a very broad picture. And each and everybody sees it from the way he or she wants to see it from. I always have this, and I always want the NDC to pick it from this angle, that we try as much as possible not to.
Hello, Mr. Yamin.
Other people. Yes, ma'am.
If you can please raise your voice a little for us. Yes.
Oh, okay. I would want to use this opportunity to advise my colleagues, party people, that we focus much about how we are going to unite the party, rather than listening to what is coming from all the cortices we have within our party. That would disunite us the more, rather than bringing us on board. I think that whoever is expressing his view about what happened should be seen as the person's own opinion and observation. And if it's true, then I think that will easily put behind us the Congress. If you ask me of my observation, it will not be the same way as His Excellency the former president or His Excellency the president. But that does not in any way signify the true picture of what really happened. And so whether I disagree or agree with the former president, to me, it's nothing that we should be discussing. At least he was there, he observed this. He saw it from an angle, I observed it, I saw it from an angle. Somebody else also observed and saw it from an angle. And so, definitely we are all not going to be speaking the same language, putting out or narrating what happened in Sudan.
So you believe...
I do not want to point out and say what he's saying was what happened there.
Okay. So national opinions will differ on that particular issue.
Of course.
That's what you are saying. Well, last week when he met some of you, he was said to have stated that he would not follow cowards to war, in apparent reference to being part of the campaign team for the NDC next year. Today he's saying he will think about it. Does that mean the ground is gradually changing?
No, my brother. You see, again, I think that in Ghana today, maybe, with apologies to you and your crew, that the media seems to be setting agenda for the political party. The reason is that when we met the ex-president, I mean, myself and the concerned of Ashanti met the ex-president, a statement, a communique was issued a day after, I mean Wednesday. If you check Wednesday, Ghana Web, Wednesday, Peace FM and other websites, it was Ashanti NDC concerned youth calls on DJ. And the statement was clear. Just after the statement was issued, station started calling us and interviewing us about what really happened. So the point really is that what transpired was issued officially.
Mm-hmm.
Then, following Cowards to War was as a result of an interview that was granted on XFM by one of the persons that was among the entourage that visited it.
So it means the former president never stated it directly?
It wasn't a categorical statement, and indeed, when the boy was even putting it out there, he didn't say that it was a categorical statement. To our surprise, the next day, Daily Guard has picked it and placed it as a banner headline, "I won't follow cowards to war." Let me use this opportunity to explain what really transpired there. What he was talking about was analyzing the Congress. And in fact, he started by putting out this, that he had never in his lifetime received a cold reception like what he received at Sunyani, and was asking rhetorical questions. That was it because the people were intimidated, or was it about juju? Was it why? He wanted to know what really happened for him to have received such a cold reception. And so went on and said that he did not believe that the delegates voted based on their conscience. And if it is so, then he thinks that delegates were cowards. And if you follow cowards to war, you end up fighting alone. Meaning that he ended up fighting alone. Because if you listen to him and what he said with the BBC interview, that calls came to his wife to contest from all corners of the party. Then the wife accepted it. And these calls were coming from delegates, were coming from party strong with founding fathers of the party. Now, when they got to the real stage, that the calls should be manifested in votes and eventually her wife becoming the flag bearer, the people turned them back, they had their back on them, and clearly showed cowardness to him. And so he ended up, or the wife ended up, fighting alone. That was the exact statement. So I do not know how come it turned out that I will not follow cowards to war also became the banner headline, and is now an issue that is moving around and creating more confusion within the party. And that is what I said. And if my party people are listening to me, I think that 2 weeks to even a month after every contest, the winners will automatically be making statements excitement as they being victors of whatever event. We'll be making certain statements that if we take it kindly, if we put all seriousness on it, we'll further disunite our party. And those that also lost will also, out of anger, out of pain, out of disappointment, will also be making certain statements of which, if we place much emphasis on it, we'll rather be disuniting our party rather than uniting the party.
Okay.
So I feel that we should now be looking ahead in whatever means. If Yamin today says that he will not be part of the NDC campaign, that should not be the end of the party executives. They should go beyond all reasonable doubt to make sure that Yamin stays in.
Okay.
Because politics is all about numbers. If today we are calling on Obeda Samoa, we are calling on Bididin and others who even declared when we needed their votes, knowing very well that they were NDC persons before they broke away, declared their support for the MPP in the 2008 runoff. But today we are negotiating with them for them to come.
Okay.
Why should we wait for people to move out before we bring them on board? So I think that even if the ex-president is stating categorically that he is not going to follow his excellency the president to the campaign trail, we should not end it there. We should go a step further and make sure that whatever it takes to win power is out there, and make sure that we win. Like they said, that if you need power, tell your mother.
Exactly, I mean.
And come and use the power and just take back your mother.
Exactly, I mean, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening. Benjamin Achina bring to you is also at the office of the president, and he's joined us on the line. Thank you so much for your time too. Well, are there discussions behind the scenes to get the former president actively on board together with the wife?
Thank you very much. Let me state emphatically that the former president Rawlings is the founder of the NDC party, and he remains as such. The leader of the party, Professor John Evans Atta Mills, is a unifier who will do everything within his power to bring anybody who needs to be on board on board. As we speak, there's little evidence to suggest that the party is divided. The fact that somebody has views which are contrary to what others think does not in itself amount to division. What is impressive, however, is that we've seen people who even broke away from the party joining the fold of the team that won the last election. That adds to our numbers. I think it is also important that we make it very clear that the views of the former president is highly respected within the ranks of the NDC. However, as a democratic party as the NDC and within a regime of a democratic country, Ghana, it is the views of the majority that will hold sway. As a party, we have organized Congress, and the decision of Congress is to unanimously maintain the president for election 2012 and as the leader of the party, period. If people have grievance, and in any society people do have grievance, there are structures within the NDC that avails itself for people to address grievances. Media commentary, which seeks to indict the integrity of the president, is unfortunate, and it will lead us completely nowhere. The truth of the matter is that the last Congress was not conducted in the bedroom of anybody. It was done in the open. It was telecast live. Your media outlet was present. Unfortunately, all the talk about allegation, the talk of bribery, the talk of corruption, there's yet to be a single verifiable evidence which have been produced to this effect. The only thing that we keep hearing is one grievance or the other, and I think moving forward, leading members of our party such as the founder, I think should know better.
Yeah. Naturally, you are saying you want him on board, even though there may be a grievance or so. But some people from some opinions want to also say that it is time for him to take a backstage, even if he wants to assist the party. And are you just thinking about exploiting his popularity for the election next year?
No, I never said we want him on board. He is already on board because he's the founder of the party. And until he states otherwise that he's not on board, it's difficult for anybody to say he's not on board. And expressing views contrary to what the majority thinks does not in itself amount to not on board. I mean, majority of Ghanaians decided that Professor Mills is the president of the country. It doesn't mean those who decide against him are not part of Ghana. So let's get these distinctions clear. He has views contrary to what others think, and that must be seen as views. But the NDC is broader than individuals. So at the end of the day, views come and there's a cocktail of them. And at the end of the day, it is the majority views which holds sway, and that's what we need to look at. I think that clearly what the former president is saying is not something which is alien or news to anybody. It's on charges of corruption and the attempt of this president to fight it. But we must understand one thing. Under Professor Mills, Ghana has been adjudged number one by the Corruption Perception Index in fighting. But the truth is that there are procedures if you want to do any other thing in a democratic dispensation, such as resorting to the court and making sure that due processes go on. It is difficult to indict executive president for the lapses of the judiciary, which is a different and a separate arm of government.
Benjamin,
let us be very clear and concise about what the former president's views are, the extent to which these views are married against what the majority thinks. Is the majority view from Congress that must be respected.
Okay. Benjamin Achinabentro, I want to thank you very much for your opinion too on these issues. But Benesin is a political commentator and also a pollster. Uncle Ben, you have been observing all that has been happening in recent times. Do you think the NDC is getting together on this, or perhaps there may be a few differences still, but they will still try to hold their own?
Well, thank you. I think that for the NDC, no matter the number of factions, when the chiefs are down, they consider whether they are better off under Mills or they are better off under Akufo-Addo and the MPP. Clearly, in the aftermath of the National Congress, feelings were hurt, egos were bruised. And when the chiefs are down, you have to just take a choice.
Yeah, there's been the accusation that has been pushed back and forth, and presently, former President Rawlings is saying he's still thinking on what to do, and they are yet to take a decision. What do you read from that?
Well, I think that it's up to the president to take the first step towards reconciliation. And a lot of whatever they will do will depend on the reaction from leading members of the president's the most faction. That will go a long way, I believe, in forming their final decision. Because you see, ex-president can never be president again. One thing which I'm finding it very regrettable is that they seem to have been deceived by people who told them they had done research and so on. Because the ex-president says that as of last year, the wife was going to win 82 or 85%. What was the basis of that? Now I remember clearly 1999, as he was exiting office, and people were saying that the wife was interested, he told me that he was not trying to build a family dynasty. That was 12 years ago. So I believe that whoever gave him that research obviously misled him and the wife.
So you believe they can get together on other issues later as a party?
I think they will get together. But, you know, I think that when somebody is down and you push the person back to the wall, I believe that when the most function starts to continue taunting and irritating them, I'm sure to get to a stage that they will say that, okay, look, we'll campaign, let's all go back to position. And that's what the NDC will have to avoid.
I want to thank you very much, Benesin, for your views too on this one. That's a poster and a political commentator on the issue of former President Rawlings. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, we are moving on. It is the expectation of every patient seeking care for his or her ailment to get well after taking the doctor's prescription. It is unthinkable for the patient to expect his or her death due to wrong prescription by a doctor, that is, if it is so. Errors in medication is said to have claimed 1.5 million lives. Ghana is no exception. It is estimated that such errors cost $5.6 million per hospital. A health consultant who made this known said patients who differ from errors in medication spend more time in the hospital and spend more money on their health. Where is the figure coming from? And is it possible that errors can create or cause so many deaths? Behind the News explores the issue further, and we have joining us on the line Dr. George Amufa, Deputy Director General of the Ghana Health Service. Thank you so much, Doc, for your time this evening.
Thank you very much. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And we are getting different figures in relation to people who die because of wrong prescription. Do you have figures at all from the health service on these ones?
That is a very difficult thing to actually estimate, and it's known that in all the developing countries, I mean, the data for measuring this type of thing.
Yeah, Doc, if you can please go down the volume of your set, that is, if you are close to it, or if you can.
No, in other words, I'm not even in the set.
Yes, we seem to be getting a feedback.
Yes, I'm also getting a feedback.
Yeah.
But it's not coming from me. So.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Yes. What I mean, the data for sex estimates, I mean, is very, 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 very difficult to come by. And except even in advanced countries, it is very rare to have such exact figures as were published in the dailies. Yesterday or so. The first thing I would say is that I can't corroborate that type of estimate, and I think probably it is an attempt to project some percentage from somewhere into the Ghanaian situation to get to that figure. But definitely, I don't know the basis of that estimation.
But Doc, you've been in practice for a long time. Are there possibilities that people may die from wrong prescription, or perhaps maybe their prescription not being read well by those who should give them the drugs?
Yes, in other words, I think it would be very naive on any body's part to claim that does not happen or that cannot happen. Even in Ghana, in fact, in developed countries, not less than about 4% of such things actually is estimated to happen, and so it's not surprising that people can get either complications from the medications that they get, or wrong diagnosis in the first place, or adverse reaction following the correct medication. And so it is definitely possible. What I'm disputing is the actual figures presented. But let me just give you a scenario of what can happen. Wrong diagnosis and wrong medication and adverse reaction form part of a larger concern, which in our setting we call patient safety. I mean, and it involves a lot more than just the drugs. I mean, it can involve getting iatrogenic infections from hospital or wherever you went for the medication, and then you instead of you go with malaria and you come back with HIV, for instance. I mean, due to transmission or injection or sepsis. Or the thereabouts, but now we focus our discussion on medication and wrong the diagnosis. Yes, it is definitely possible, but let know that there are regulations for diagnosis and regulations for prescription. Only people who have been trained to diagnose and prescribe in the orthodox sphere are then allowed to do that, and so normally the doctors who go through that type of training are allowed. Medical assistants are also trained to do some prescriptions at that level, and in some clinics to train the nurses are also allowed. The everything starts with diagnosing what the problem is, and there can be a mistake in the diagnosis in the first place. I mean, because you it's actually a collection of the symptoms of the patient with the signs, clinical examination supported by laboratory investigation if need be, and then you come to an impression of what possibly is wrong with the person. That process be wrong. And that is why at times we ask for a second opinion if there's a doubt to that.
Okay. Doc,
let's assume that the diagnosis is correct. And then it leads to a prescription. A prescription to that particular condition can also be wrong. Because there are different ways of managing a particular condition. Either the dosage may be wrong, or the duration of use, or even the expiry date of the particular drug may affect the medication. Somebody may also wrongly read even the handwriting of the prescriber. He thinks, I mean, you know how doctors write on prescription forms. So somebody can just read it, and instead of where this particular drug, he thinks it's that other one, and actually prescribe a different medication for that. Even if it's not wrong, it is possible for the patient to react to the correct medication that has been given, and that is also possible. And so there are a lot of checks and balances we try to put in place. I mean, under what we call the quality assurance system. I mean, yes. In the healthcare.
Dr. Abufa, you've mentioned one big area that we really need to explore at another time. But for now, I want to thank you so much for explaining the basis for maybe such figures coming out and all. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Dr. George Amufa is Deputy Director General of the Ghana Health Service. But he mentioned one very important thing. Sometimes the prescription being misread. And that will mean it is going to the pharmacist or those who are dispensing at the chemist. Edward Ampofu is the Chief Pharmacist at the Cuckoo Clinic. He's also on the line. Thank you so much, sir, for your time.
Thank you very much.
Do you tend to have a lot of such problems, not being able to read what has been written by doctors?
Oh, yes, it is entirely possible if you're running a system, particularly if you have a new doctor coming into the system. It may take you some time for you to be conversant or familiar with the kind of handwriting that you are receiving. If the person is already around, it is easy for you to know the way the person writes T, the person writes R. And it is for this reason that some of us have been advocating that it's about time that we pushed towards electronic prescribing.
So, normally, what do you do when you have such problems?
When you are in doubt about the handwriting, if it's illegible, you have colleagues, you are the pharmacist who you can cross-check with. If you're still not certain about what has been written, you can go back to the prescriber and for him to explain what he has written to you. We do this all the time, just to make sure that at the end of the day, you get the correct medicine being given to the client.
Yeah. So, do you get some coming back to say that my doctor said the medicine you gave me is not what he or she wrote or prescribed?
You will get a client coming back to tell you.
Perhaps you thought
If you have done all the checks and balances, then you would avoid such situations for a client coming back to tell you that this is not what the doctor prescribed for you. You can only find yourself in a situation if you do not go over all the processes carefully and cross-check your colleague and with the prescriber.
Yeah, certainly wrong prescriptions and other things being spoken about is a big area we need to explore further.
It is not only wrong prescription. If you look at the chain that happens, from prescription, you dispensing and even administering, and even record keeping, because if you do not even put notes where they are supposed to be put in, you can have wrong information being given to the prescriber about a particular client, and as a result of that, leading to a generation of a wrong prescription.
Sometimes, you know, after the prescription, and I've heard you talk about it before previously, that people go back looking at all the things they've been given and say, oh, I have some of these at home, so no problem. Be a cause?
It is. Because if you are looking at the continuum about what can lead to medication errors, if the patient tells you, particularly we see sometimes the chronic disease patients who sometimes do not have a clear picture about what the medications are doing for them and the need for them to take the medications all the time. They feel better after some time, and then some have the inclination of, you know, stopping taking the medication. And so after a period of time, they may have inverted commas and SS at home. And when they come to the pharmacy, will then begin to tell you that they have some of this at home. But I also have to mention that sometimes, based upon what the patient's own responses, you can have medications doses either being reduced, you know, or being changed. And if you don't have a system which will call for these medicines being returned to you at the hospital, then you could have some of these medicines also being at home of these patients.
Mr. Edward Ampofo, we want to thank you very much. But certainly, as mentioned, we'll expand on some of these other angles at a later time.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. That's the chief pharmacist at the Coco Clinic, looking at the issue of prescription. Before we go, let's look at this quick one. The Electoral Commission has signaled its intention to compile a new voters register using biometric technology in October. But the Dankwa Institute, a media research and policy analysis center, is raising red flags about the timetable, saying the contract negotiation, award and management of procurement of logistics should all have been completed before the end of last month. A lot of issues there to explore. Keep watching the space, and we'll be expanding much more on it. Some of your tests here: if JJ is not certain whether to campaign for NDC, then he should campaign for NPP, Francis Vanankaiwa West. The call by the IDP is in the right direction, but can it be achieved? Salia is sending that one. And NDC is a big party, so I expect former president to take part in the campaign for the party to capture power 2012. Sadi B. Joseph from Akati Farms, Kumasi. And Baba Musa UDS, former President Rawlings should forget about the past Congress and forge ahead in unity with President Mills and the NDC in general for the benefit of the party and not an individual. And may Allah bless former President Rawlings and the wife. May the good Lord unite NDC. Alas, Zazudu. I appeal to former President Rawlings and wife to put the Congress results behind and join President Mills to win next year's election. J.K. Uwumampong. Papa Jerry, please, you are very crucial to the NDC 2012 campaign team. So please, we need you to be on board, you see, for Nas Tamale. And whether the Rawlingses join in campaigning for NDC or not, 2012 is for Nanadu Sham, sending that one. I and my family will never vote in 2012 if President Rawlings and the NDC fail to convince JJ to campaign for the party. David, UDS. Father Rawlings, please forgive NDC and return to action. Bukhari, sending that one. And my heart is burning. I'm waiting to see my father, Akufo-Addo, to become the president of Ghana. Inshallah, he will win the seat. Remember, from Kafaba. Irrespective of who got what in Sunyai, the NDC without Rawlings can never win in 2012, Avoka. NDC without Rawlings can never win election in Ghana. Tony, says she. Mr. Rawlings should leave NDC alone. Robert from Sandando in Northern Region. We thank you all for sending in that one. If it wasn't used, don't worry, you'll get another chance. We want to thank so much our production team for their immense assistance. Bright Agama, Christopher Siedu, Edmond Tete, Ose Balubi, Sat Ade Controls, Dave Selassie, Akutu, and Brighton Trauma were our production assistants. My name is Kingsley Obintre.
Live from the capital, this is Unique 95.7.